Views expressed by the guests and telephone participants do not necessarily express the views of the management, staff, or sponsors of AM 950 KHI.
Welcome, KHI listeners. I am Anne Hidalgo, and you are listening to A Time for Seniors. My guest today is Hannah with Roseville Elder Services. Welcome, Hannah.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining our show today. And tell us what Roseville Elder Services is. What do you guys do?
Yeah, so like Anne said, my name is Hannah Wagner, and I'm the owner and founder of Roseville Elder Services. It is a private mental health practice that I opened about a year and a half ago after working with older adults and their caregivers for the past 10 years. So I offer individual mental health therapy. I also offer aging consultations, advanced care planning workshops, and then I provide education and do speaking engagements like the one we're doing right now.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Okay, so you are the owner and founder. That's awesome. So tell us a little bit about how you got into this. How did you open up and decide to own Roseville Elder Services?
Yeah, so I am a licensed clinical social worker, and I started my career working as a hospice social worker. So I kind of started at the end as opposed to the beginning, but it really showed me the need for folks to be able to have difficult conversations around death and dying and just the importance of being educated and knowing what your options are as you are nearing end of life. And that experience was really powerful for me. So I took that experience in addition to the other roles that I have had the opportunity to engage in throughout my career and all the knowledge that I have gained in those different roles. And I asked myself, you know, what are some skills that I have that I'm passionate about? And then what are some gaps in services in the Roseville or the Placer County community? And so that's kind of how I came up with creating this private practice. And typically private practices offer individual or group therapy, but I felt like with my social work experience doing case management, helping people navigate levels of care, looking at community resources, working with insurance companies, I just felt like there were other areas that I could offer as well. And so that's why it's Roseville Elder Services, offering several services.
Wow, that's amazing. You're such a creative thinker and you think outside the box.
Thank you.
That's awesome. So you kind of just were in the industry, we'll say, and then saw the need was very broad.
Yes. And I think specifically for mental health, what I saw, you know, as you are probably very familiar, the older adult population is the fastest growing population. Mm-hmm. But it's just statistically, there are few mental health professionals and even medical professionals that specialize in working with older adults. And that's just a place I kind of found myself in. Like, I had spent my career working with older adults. I absolutely love that population. I'm really passionate about their care. And I realized, oh my gosh, not many people really understand what they're going through. And so I really felt like using my clinical skills, I could meet the mental health needs of this population, not with generic care, but with specialized care.
Yeah. Yeah. That is really amazing. Cause it is, it's what you said at the beginning of that paragraph is being in the industry, we can see the massive need for this and, not a lot of options. And I've actually wondered why, and I'm not a senior and I don't come from that day and age. So it's but I'm learning, you know, after getting to know all of my clients and, you know, my story of getting into senior care is I was friends with my grandparents. You know, they were just a part of my life, and I've been around older adults, and I haven't seen in history where we really took care of our mental health very well. I'm not, you know, very well read. You know, some people read 100 books a year. I'm not that type of person, but I did go through high school and college, and I like history. I enjoy reading history books, but I don't see in history where, you know, we really have spent a lot of time taking care of our mental health. I don't even know that the word mental health was used. Like, I feel like that term is almost a relatively new term when you're talking to someone who's 90.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And so sometimes I'll say emotional health, you know, because like you said, we have to be aware of the context and the generations that we're working with.
Yeah.
And, you know, in our culture and country, physical health has been really revered. Everybody would agree, you know, go see your primary care doctor once a year, make sure that you're doing your follow-up appointments. And only, you know, recently have we started to change the language where we are even asking our friends and family or even our adult parents or grandparents about their mental or emotional health. Mm-hmm. But what I like to tell people is if you're a human, which we all are, mm-hmm. if you have emotions, you have mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're only focusing on the physical and not the mental health, we're going to be off balanced.
Yeah.
Just like if we're only focusing on mental health and not physical health, we're going to be off balance. And what we're seeing in psychology and in the medical field with research is they're actually highly connected, our mental and physical health.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't take care of our mental health, research shows that there's a greater and quicker cognitive decline in older adults when they don't take care of their mental health, that there's an increase in depression and in anxiety if they're not addressing their mental health, and overall a lower quality of life. So it's really important to talk to older adults about their mental health and to provide them with education so that they understand what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love this. I love what you're doing. And I honestly wish there was more of you, because it's kind of what we're saying. The population is really large, mm-hmm. and there's not, well, it's almost like we're on late breaking, you know, this is breaking news happening, because mm-hmm. like I said, when you talk to an 80 or 90 year old, sometimes they're hearing this mental health. This is all newfangled medicine, new to them. You know, I'm in my 40s. I feel like it's that word, that term has been around my life for, you know, I don't know, 10, 20 years. It's been a common word, but it's not for our older population. And like you said, they go to the doctor, and I don't know that the doctor's asking, you know, they're asking blood pressure, weight, you know, those kind of things, the vitals.
Mm-hmm.
But are we asking, how are you doing?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that's probably individual to each person. I know for me personally, when I go to my primary care, I've actually seen a change in the last 5 years where they now have me fill out what's called a PHQ-9 and a GAD-7 assessment, which those are actually tools I use to assess for depression and anxiety. And so if you answer high on the first two questions of those assessments in the doctor's office, they are required to ask you follow-up questions about that. And my mm-hmm. doctor has. So I do think it's individual to each doctor, but I think that there is hope and encouragement that it is being integrated at least into primary care. And mm-hmm. a lot of the referrals that I get are actually from primary care doctors or from neurologists,
right?
Because they might have a client come in with a physical symptom where the doctor has done what they can to treat it, but the client is still experiencing, you know, shortness of breath or tightness in their chest or stomach aches that cannot be linked to a medical condition. And so the doctors now are aware and educated to say, this might be an emotional health issue that is impacting the client physically. And so then I get a referral, and then I'm able to work with the client on, you know, what are the sensations they're feeling in their body? When do they happen? Is there a correlation there with maybe stress or, you know, a really uncomfortable situation or something that they're feeling fear about? Mm-hmm. And so we kind of dive into that and explore, you know, what's going on and why, and then giving them tools so that when they feel that way, they know, oh, this is my anxiety. I'm going to pause and take 4 deep breaths or count to 10 or whatever might be, as opposed to I have tightness of chest. I'm going to go to the ER.
Right. That's amazing. It makes me think about what I have read in the history books about like hysteria. I've read about that. It seems very researched, but what was hysteria? What were these women experiencing when they were just hysterical? I mean, that's a pretty rough day when you've just kind of, you know, lost your mind a little bit and you're just, I mean, hysteria. These women were losing their mind, kind of undiagnosed.
Yeah, I think the history with mental health in America is not a pretty road to go down. And like many things, and I don't want to get political here, but a lot of systems are put into place to benefit a certain population. And so I would say historically, mental health was part of that. You know, women at that time in the 20s, when that word came out, didn't have the right to vote or own land. They were property of their husbands. And so, you know, maybe they did have serious mental health issues, or maybe that was a power play by the husband to say, okay, well, you know, things aren't going well. She's being hysterical. I'm going to commit her to a mental health institution. Mm-hmm. And that's really a majority, if you dig into the research, what was going on. So it's a bit of a tricky history. There's a lot that went into that besides just mental health. And I know in our country, you know, we have since shut down mental health institutions because they were not healing people. They were keeping them sick. And of course, medicine has come a long way too. And medicine and therapy, talk therapy, often go hand in hand. So addressing, is there a chemical imbalance in the brain, which is when medication would be beneficial, coupled with talk therapy. So learning again, what are the environments or the conversations or the people that trigger you to feel a certain way, and then working on how can you identify how you feel and then manage those emotions in a healthy way. And a lot of us weren't taught how to do that. And so this is kind of a newer skill that we're teaching the older population.
Yeah, I do feel like it's a newer skill. And I think it's one of the skills that are now being taught to children that we've never...
It's amazing. Yeah. It's very humbling. I have 3 daughters. 2 are grown. We have 3 grandchildren and then a 7-year-old still in the home. And yeah, it's I look at them and think, oh my gosh, the way that I'm talking to them about their feelings and emotions is so different from how I was raised, which was probably so different from how my mom was raised, right? Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool to see within a few generations, you know, this positive shift towards identifying and managing our emotions in a healthy way.
Yeah, that is really amazing. It really is. So tell me a little bit about Roseville Elder Services. Obviously Roseville's in the name, so you service Roseville. What's your area of service that you will cover?
Yeah, so I am unique. I offer a unique service where I provide mental health therapy in the home of the client. And so the reason that I do that is because, like I said, when I was kind of taking a survey of what was already out there and what were some gaps, I noticed that there are a lot of seniors and caregivers who maybe can't get out of the home to go to a therapy office, maybe because they're overwhelmed by caregiving, or maybe because it makes it challenging with their mobility, or maybe they have a transportation issue. And so there are, you know, wonderful therapists in our area who have therapy offices. I am a little different where I go into the home. And so because it's just me, I go to Roseville, Rockland, and Lincoln. So I have clients in those 3 areas. And then I am able to service everybody else throughout the state of California virtually. Okay. So I do have a large portion of my caseload that I do therapy with online. And then I also offer it over the phone because I recognize not all older adults are going to be tech savvy.
Right.
So if they're wanting that over the phone, I'm happy to do that as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. So I love the at-home option. I think I remember that from when I first met you because I'm in home care. My company is non-medical in home care, and there's such a value to provide the service in the home. Mm-hmm. It's just a wonderful thing. I've been talking to a group of doctors that's starting in home doctor visits.
I love that.
Yeah, I just love it. There's something so beautiful about that. We did that in the olden days. All the doctors came to the houses.
Yes. For
the beginning of doctoring, there wasn't doctor's offices. There was only just doctors who came to your house. It was lovely. Right. And, obviously we've advanced way past that. But I do love that we kind of need both. We do need the medical. We need you to have an office. We need to be able to come to you. But sometimes it just doesn't work.
Right.
And it's so wonderful to have the professionals be able to be mobile.
Yeah.
And service the seniors who are homebound. There's hundreds of thousands of homebound seniors. They can't get out.
Exactly. And it's very isolating. And so to mm-hmm. be able to go into the home is not only beneficial for them, but it actually gives me a clearer clinical view because I can see what's going on in the home. Mm-hmm. If I was talking to a senior over the phone, I couldn't see what their house looked like, what they looked like physically. Maybe they have disheveled hair. Maybe they, have like a sink full of dishes. So being able to go into the home, as you know, with the kind of care that your employees do, it gives you a greater picture than you would get if they came in or if they were just talking to you over the phone. So that's really absolutely helpful in the kind of work that I do as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you get a view into their world and their environment mm-hmm. instead of just their words.
Exactly. Because they don't always match up, do they? I can get, my hair and makeup done and look pretty decent, but it might not reflect what I'm really feeling internally.
Right.
What my home is showing how I'm really feeling. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is one of the things that is another societal thing is we are as a society kind of trained since we're little to put your clothes on, look nice, go run your errands, go to your doctor appointment. So there's a lot of people that will walk in looking a way that doesn't actually match. And I love that home, that extra special little thing of being, plus how relaxed are you in your living room?
Yes.
This is in someone else's office.
Absolutely. Especially if you have mobility issues or chronic pain. I mean, it takes a lot for an individual just to get dressed, let alone get out the door and get to an office. So most of my career, I have spent in the field working with older adults in their homes. And so I just love it. It's what I prefer. I think it's a lot more beneficial than, showing up in an office and just getting a small slice of the whole picture. So that was one part of opening my private practice that was really important to me, was to be able to fill that gap. I don't know of other therapists doing it. If they are, that's wonderful. I just don't know of that. So I'm thrilled to be able to offer that service.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know of any either. So you might be the only one in our area.
I don't know.
Because I know I interview a lot of people and I have not heard of anybody doing, mobile in-home therapy. Yeah. So let's explain that a little bit to the average person, because there is a difference between therapists and counselors and PhD. Can you prescribe meds? Let's go into that a little bit. Which vein are you in? Or maybe explain the different veins and then tell us where you are.
Absolutely. Such a great question. I love that. I appreciate you bringing that up. It can be very confusing, all the acronyms.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, there's that large umbrella of counselors or therapists. It means the same thing, right? We just depends on what term people are more comfortable using. Within that umbrella, you can be licensed or have a degree with clinical experience in four different areas. So the first one is your psychologist or your PhD. Your second one is licensed clinical social worker, which is what I am. Your third one would be a licensed marriage and family therapist. And then your fourth one is a licensed professional counselor. So the psychologist and the clinical social workers have been around the longest, and then came marriage and family therapists, and then came licensed professional counselors. They all can do essentially the same thing. You'll see them all in hospitals. You'll see them all at county mental health. You'll see them all in private practice. So as long as they have gained the education, so bachelor's and master's degree, and the clinical hours, and then you have to take a clinical test and then keep up on your education and everything to be licensed, you're then able to provide licensed mental health therapy without being supervised. So basically you're like at the top of your field in that area. So if you're looking for somebody who can diagnose and prescribe medication, that's going to be a DO or a doctor, and that's going to be a psychiatrist. So a psychiatrist is a doctor who has the education and clinical experience and licensure to diagnose and prescribe psychiatric or mental health medication. So a lot of people have maybe an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety medication that their primary care doctor prescribes. And that's great. Primary care often prescribes low-level basic mental health medication. But if you have somebody who has a long history of mental health challenges or who have more complicated diagnoses such as bipolar 1, schizophrenia, psychosis disorder, those more high-level, intense diagnoses often require a high-level, specialized doctor, which is going to be your psychiatrist.
Okay. Okay, that's wonderful. So if I'm hearing you correctly, in my little layman's terms of brains, on your level, can you prescribe medication?
I cannot, because I'm not a doctor.
Okay. So you cannot, but you refer to, like, if I was explaining my symptoms and that sounded like something that you knew of, there was a medication that could help me, would you suggest I go to my primary care and request something for that?
I would, or I might even suggest you see a psychiatrist.
Okay.
Because they are ultimately the mental health doctor, right? And so a lot of people would prefer to go to the specialist versus a generalist, is what we would call primary care. They're more generalized. So I do often refer to psychiatrists. And then specifically in my population, again, when you're serving older adults, particularly with medication, there are certain medications that can be very risky to the health of the older adult, and even cause or accelerate cognitive decline like dementia or Alzheimer's. And so, again, it really requires that specialized doctor to understand those risks, mm-hmm. so that they're not prescribing medications to older adults who can be harmful. And so I love referring specifically to geriatric psychiatrists because, again, they specialize in working with older adults. But again, there's only two of them in the area, and so they're very busy. So, we definitely need another generation to come through of geriatric specialists in this field to meet the need of this growing population.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is interesting. And I remember a statistic from a few years ago that the numbers were so low of individuals going to nursing school, med school, continuing through med school to the next level, which gets you through the master's program, to the next level, which gets you through the PhD program. I mean, how many years is that?
I mean, it's a lot, right? Like I did 4 years of a bachelor's, and then I did 2 years with a master's for master's in social work. And then if you were to get your hours, so your clinical hours have to be supervised. There's a lot of regulations around that. You have to do so many individual you know, therapy sessions, so many hours of group sessions, things like that. So if you were to do that in the quickest amount of time, it would take you 2 years. And then from there, you have to pass the test. And not everybody passes the test the first time. And I think you have to wait. I think if you don't pass, you have to wait several months. So that last piece of getting your hours and getting and passing the test, that's usually where you'll see people. You know, some people get it in 2 years. It took me 5 years just because I'm a mom and I was juggling working full time along, you know, trying to get my clinical hours and having a baby in between. So it took me a minute to get that done. But yeah, so it can take a while. It's a really big undertaking, you know, financially, time wise. Not everybody gets their hours for free. So some employers, you work for them and it includes your supervision, but there was a large portion of my time where I worked for an employer that did not offer that. So I actually had to pay out of pocket for supervision.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's quite an undertaking.
Really? It really, really is, which is probably why there's not a lot of you. The need is so much greater than the clinicians.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about older adults. And I think, you know, Anne, if people didn't grow up like you and me, I also was very close to my grandparents. On my dad's side, they are like heavily Native American culture. And so the elder in the Native culture is like the number one, like so much respect, you know, they're the keeper of our stories. They have the wisdom. And so I just grew up with like this reverence and honor and awe towards mm-hmm. our elders and, mm-hmm. you know, spent a lot of time just sitting and listening to them. I love stories. That's just kind of part of my personality. Which is a great fit because I think older adults have so much wisdom to share. And I think in our culture, we do a disservice when we like shut them away and they're not integrated in our society because they have paved the way for us. Mm-hmm. They have so much like skills and knowledge to offer us. So, you know, one of the workshops I do when I go speak with older adults is I talk about aging with purpose. I just presented on that at the Placer Protect Senior Resource Fair we just had on Thursday.
Yes, yes.
And part of that workshop is, you know, talking about the importance of older adults being in our community and giving back because we need them. They're such a big part of the wealth and knowledge that I think helps a community thrive.
Absolutely. I have in my mind, in my perfect world that is always running in my mind, ideas like to make the world better, the multicultural centers where you have the senior center, but you also have the daycare.
Yeah.
In the same, I feel like all the talks I've gone to, all the trainings I've done on both sides of, because I, in college, I was a nanny through college. My credits in college are the EEC credits or EC credits with the child development stuff. And there are so many benefits to children, small children.
Yes.
Being around grandparents.
Absolutely.
And then when you flip over, and now I'm over in the senior care world, it's the same statistics for the seniors being around the children. And it's not necessarily their children at all.
Right.
It doesn't have a connector of like, be around your own grandchildren,
right,
with your own people. That's not the statistics that I've heard. It's just be around children.
Yes.
And for children, it's, you know, be around older adults, like what you were just saying, the wisdom that they impart, the stories, the just every, it's almost like their vibe, their energy, their spirit, depending on where you go with all that, you know, what your belief structure is, it's that imparting that to them and in just imparting the, you know, littlest things as, oh, come over here and let me show you a different way of doing that.
Yes.
to a 5-year-old, that's like mind blown. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And just the practical skills too that they know that are kind of dying out. Like, you know, I don't know how to sew. I don't know how to knit. You know, like there are certain things where I feel like if we don't continue teaching the next generation, then we're going to lose these skills, right? So, you know, on a very practical level too, it's so important to have them share that knowledge with the next generation. And I know there are some kind of multi-generational opportunities locally through the senior center. And then I know there's like different churches in the area that do multi-generational, like Bible studies or group get-togethers. And then I think there are several online options too, where older adults can sign up to mentor college kids. And it's pretty cool because, you know, the college kids might not want to talk to their parents about what they're going through. Maybe they don't have supportive parents or parents who can just listen to them. So they connect with an older adult who can. And then, you know, both are benefiting. You know, the college kid is gaining that wisdom and knowledge and perspective of the older adult. And then the older adult feels good about, like, hey, I'm contributing. Like, what I went through matters, right? Like, I get to share
Absolutely.
that and positively impact the next generation. So there are some pretty cool opportunities out there, you know, for older adults who are interested in that multi-generational connection.
Yes, for sure. For sure. I know. And I've thought about so many different ways to make it practical in our school system. You know, in every schoolhouse, school building, there should be like the grandparents' room where there's
Oh
just,
my
you
gosh.
know, grandparents circling
Absolutely.
through doing 2-3 hour shifts in there. And it's
That would
like,
be really cool.
wouldn't that be cool if
Yeah.
like third period or fourth period or every, you know, every day, every, you just got to go into the grandparents' room and just hang out with them, just be with them.
I love that idea. That's
Wouldn't
amazing.
it be, it, I think it would be so great. And just have it part of like our educational system is,
Yes.
and then teach skills. One grandma's sitting over there knitting. And
Yeah.
so just go sit next to her, and the school can provide the, you know, gear that's needed. And even in colleges, have part of the library in one of the rooms in the library, just the grandparents' rooms, and just let the grandparents just sit, you know, schedule them an hour or two a week, and every, you know, retired individual who can be mobile enough to get there goes and sits, and the students can just come in and say, you know, I've got this situation, like what you're saying, talk to them instead of family, or, you know,
Yeah.
I've got this problem with my, you know, English professor going on. I mean, the wisdom that these individuals have because they've been on this planet for so long is, it's just a wealth of information. And sometimes it's like bottled up sitting in their house, you
Right.
know,
When
or
I was in college, we had it was called Adopt a Grandparent Program. And so we like filled out these forms, kind of like online dating, but it was like to match you with a grandparent.
Oh, I
So it's
love
like
that.
they filled out their interests and, you know, some of their values and that kind of thing. And then we did the same thing. And then we were matched. And I, to this day, like remember my grandparent, remember her name. After that whole program ended, I would still go visit her. We would write to each other. Because there was a senior living apartment complex right across the street from the college I went to. And so that they, you know, I guess somebody in that building who ran it connected with the college and they created this program. And then I think once a month we would all get together for like games and a potluck dinner. And that also helped some of the seniors connect with each other. Because, you know, who knows if they had met each other, even though they lived in the same building as each other.
I love that. I absolutely love that. I wish that was happening every day in every state, every college,
Yeah, shout out
everything.
to the
Shout out to the colleges. Go find your, and I'm sure a bunch of them are
I
doing it.
certainly do. Yeah.
There's probably a bunch doing it. It's just we need, like we said, more. And this is all kind of a relatively new thing in the global history of even acknowledging that we need to take care of our brains and our minds, and figure out that along with our chest pains of, is that a heart attack or,
Yes.
you know, a panic
Yes.
attack?
And for the record, go to the ER if you're having chest pain, right?
Absolutely.
But just highlighting that, you know, the physical body is connected to the emotional body. And what's been really powerful working with older adults is being able to help them identify how that emotional pain is showing up physically. Mm-hmm. And then when we address the emotional pain, the physical pain goes away. And it is the most amazing thing ever. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a client who, he had this one spot in his back for 17 years that was causing pain. And he had had MRIs done and CT scans and all these things. And they could not figure out what was wrong. Everything looked good. And so we went through several different exercises together to identify what was going on there emotionally. And then after that last session where I do an exercise, just helping clients kind of figure out what's going on and kind of having a conversation even with themselves about that. Mm-hmm. And then the next week we come into the session and he's like, my back pain is gone.
I love that.
Gone after that is, 17 years.
That is wild. That's one of those stories where it's just like, no, that can't
I
be.
Know.
No, but I know. I believe it, and I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen in my own self, in my own family members. That is so real and so true and so amazing.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, it's not that I'm so surprised that because I don't believe in this work. It's just that that's pretty darn dramatic. Like, and no back pain. So yeah, I think mental health and going to therapy can be what you want it to be, right? So if you're open to really diving in and identifying things and doing the work outside of the therapy session, so many things are possible. I mean, I've had clients' physical health improve, their intimacy with their partner improve, their overall quality of life improve. You know, I work with clients to identify, what is your purpose now? Let's redefine it because you're different. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the things that you were passionate about and could do physically, you can't do anymore. Mm-hmm. So a lot of older adults kind of get stuck. And I say, hey, let's look at that and go, what can you do physically? What can you do mentally? And let's whittle down what you're passionate about and redefine that purpose. Because when older adults have purpose, when they're meeting with people multi-generationally, we see lower risks of depression, lower risks of anxiety. And when older adults are getting out and about, they're being more physically active. They want to actually care for their health because there's this higher accountability, like, oh, well, you know, if I don't take care of myself, if I don't take my medication, or if I don't get out and walk, I'm not going to be able to show up to that volunteer opportunity, and people rely on me. You know, so we also see improvement in their physical health too, when they have a sense of purpose and a way of contributing. So, you know, it's all intertwined.
It really, really is. And I do love how medicine is advancing to see that and put that together. It really warms my heart every time I watch a TED talk or something where we're yet again connecting these two worlds. And I really have compassion for our seniors because they lived in a world where it wasn't connected.
Yeah.
It's even portrayed in the movies how there was just like a crazy little grandma running around. And you know what I'm saying? And they would say, oh, that's grandma. Oh, that's, or, you know, oh, that's Uncle Sal. He's a, you know, crazy guy. He's lost his mind. That's what they also used to say, that term.
Or your purple. Yeah.
And it's like, well, what was that? And these people were so untaken care of and so overlooked. Yeah. and maybe they just needed to just talk something out.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and you have to think about the generations too, and what they went through with the world wars and, you know, the depression, there was huge scarcity. So as a generation, you know, they did experience quite a bit of trauma, and you're right, there wasn't support there for that trauma. I mean, even like our Vietnam vets who came back, there was no discussion around PTSD. That wasn't even a thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even a thing to be diagnosed mm-hmm. until years later when, you know, people in the medical and mental health world realize, oh my gosh, these vets are coming back with these really specific symptoms that are connected to this traumatic experience. And then that's when the research began. So, you know, historically, when we look at these things, there has been a lot of challenges, you know, in our just history of the experiences that these older adults have had. And, you know, then you think about, you know, the male experience versus the female experience historically mm-hmm. and the roles mm-hmm. and the pressure. And then you have to look at, you know, the socioeconomic class and if you're a person of color, right? So there's all these different layers too that impact the mental health of a person and of a generation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Some of my favorite clients I've ever had are the type of personality that just blurt stuff out. And then they say, well, I'm 90. I get to say whatever I want.
Yeah.
That's always my favorite. Cause I'm like, talk more. I want to hear like, just blurt stuff out. Just go.
Yes, I love it. Well, I think at that age, you know, I would hope to feel the most confident in myself mm-hmm. that I could just be myself instead of worrying about, you know, how do I look and how do I sound? Mm-hmm. You know, but that's not always the case. I think that's kind of dependent upon the individual and their own kind of process.
Yeah. And their own personality and what their story has created up into that day.
Yeah. But you did bring up something I wanted to address. You mentioned, you know, like the way mental health has been displayed in literature, in movies, the way we've talked about it historically. And I do think that that has impacted or created a barrier today for seniors accessing mental health. So, you know, what I often see when I talk to seniors, like when I was at that Placer Protect resource fair, you know, there were like 500 seniors that walked through there. I had lots of different conversations. And several of them, you know, when I would say like, oh, I'm a mental health therapist, they would like physically step away from me. And it's so interesting when I would, you know, kind of ask them like, what do you think when I say that? They say, oh, well, I don't need that. Mm-hmm. And I would ask like, okay, well, why don't you think you need that? And often the response was, I don't have any mental health issues. Mm-hmm. I don't have mental health. And so it gave me the opportunity to educate, right? I would say, okay, are you a human? And they'd kind of chuckle, yeah, you know. I'd say, okay, do you have emotions? And they're like, well, yeah. And I'd say, well, then you have mental health. I said, mental health doesn't just mean kind of like what you mentioned, Anne, like someone running around, like screaming and yelling. It doesn't mean that you even look disheveled, right? It just mm-hmm. means that you have an emotional part of your overall health. Mm-hmm. And how is it doing? Is it doing well or does it need support? Mm-hmm. So that's been a big barrier that I've come up against is the stigma mm-hmm. around mental health and what it even means. And I think that's why, you know, I do these educational workshops because, you know, a lot of the older adults afterward will come up to me and say, I didn't know that that nausea I feel in my stomach is anxiety. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that, you know, when I wake up in the middle of the night and I can't go back to sleep, that that's insomnia that can be treated. I didn't know that my sort of like lack of interest in things that I'm normally interested in is depression. Mm-hmm. Right? We just hear these terms, but we don't always connect them to like our individual daily lives. And yeah. In the workshop, I have the opportunity to do that. And you just see their eyes go wide open, like, whoa, you know, and even with caregivers, I'll talk about, are you getting irritable? Are you snapping at the person that you are caring for? Is your inner talk really negative. Like, here I go again. I got to help them out again. You know, how come no one else is helping me? So identifying those specific examples and saying, if this is your experience, it means you need more support. And they're just like, oh my gosh, I had no idea.
That is so true. That's so true. And honestly, in 50 years, it probably is going to be different.
Yeah.
Because the, you know, our kids, when they're, you know, in 50 years from their age and 60 years from their age, we might even be gone by then, or 60 years, however long it's going to take for us to be gone. The movies are portraying it differently. Right. Everything is being portrayed differently. It's being talked about differently. It's being talked at the dinner table now. I mean, I know I'm talking about it with my kids. You're talking about it with your kids. So our kids are, this is something that is a normal topic to them, instead of that step back of, I don't have that. Yeah. Our kids are going, oh yeah, we totally have that. Mom's been talking to me about my mental health since I was 7.
I know.
Why are you crying? Not stop crying. I know there was the stop crying generation where it was just stop crying. Just stop it. Now it's, why are you crying?
Right.
What's going on? Mm-hmm. What's really happening? And just cry. Just cry it out. I mean, just let, I don't subscribe to the little infant cry it out method, because I don't, that hurts my heart. I never let my babies cry it out. I thought that was so horrible. But literally sitting and crying together with a teenager or with a 10-year-old who's just having a bad day. And, you know, to us, it seems pretty dumb. Their Lego thing broke. Mm-hmm. And then they wanted peanut butter and jelly, and we were out of peanut butter. And, you know, and to their little brain, they're like, it all compounds together. And they're just like, this is the worst day ever. And just sitting in that with them. Just
And we're no different, right? Like, maybe it's not Legos and peanut butter, but it might be that, you know, I like mismanage my time. I'm running late to my next session, and then I get stuck behind somebody that's slow, you know, and then I feel all like disheveled. And then on the way home, my flat tire, you know, happens. And then, you know, like I get a call from my daughter's school. And so, yeah, how am I going to manage all of that, right? Like, if I haven't slept well or ate well or taking a moment to breathe and check in with myself, I'm probably not going to be handling all of that very well, right? So I think of it that way, like this is their version of my adult, like, day.
Yeah, right. It's their version. It's their world.
Yes.
Just like it's our world, it's Absolutely. Their world, and it's all they've got. And it matters, and they matter. And I remember a lot of times, because I have 5 kiddos, and I had all 5 of them in 6 years. So I had this like group of just tiny humans, and they all had feelings and big feelings. And I remember telling myself, you know, my self-talk, like, remember, it's their world. To me, it's like first world problem, kid, you're fine. But in their world, it's because their world was really small. It only involved our house and their toys and food. So that's their whole world. So if the toy broke or the food wasn't good or right or whatever, that's everything they have. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think too, you know, if you're creating a safe environment where you're giving space for your kids to process all of that and learning skills, right? Like, I'm getting upset. Maybe I need to step away versus yelling at the person. And my hope is, like, you know, my daughter has learned all that in the safety of her home, so that when she does leave and becomes an adult, she's more equipped to handle the things of the world, right? She's not going to get as upset as quickly, right? Because she has these skills. Or if she does get upset, she knows how to calm herself down, right?
Yeah, how to process through those hard moments.
Yes. And again, I look around at what's happening, you know, with our adult generation today, and I'm like, wow, we're all acting a lot like young kids, partially because, again, we weren't raised that way. And so we're almost like having these big fits as adults, but obviously our consequences of our fits are much greater, right? It's so important at every level. And you don't have to be, you know, so mentally ill that you need to be on medication or that you need to be placed, you know, in like an intensive outpatient, right? There's the whole spectrum of mental health. And I think, you know, having these conversations and normalizing it, like you said, my kids know all about mental health. It's easier to seek help, right? When it's a normal thing to do, just like it's normal to go to the primary care doctor. So, you know, that's really my hope and goal with these types of conversations and doing educational workshops with older adults is to normalize mental health, not, you know, for the purpose of that alone, which is great, but also so that they feel safer and more comfortable receiving help when they're not doing well or when they need that extra support.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, that about wraps our show up for today. So why don't you give your phone number one more time?
Yes. Yeah, so as a reminder, for those of you listening today, please go to my website, www.roseville elder services.com, to download your free guide, Protect Your Peace, 10 Essential Emotional Health Tips for Seniors. And if you're interested in getting additional support as an older adult or as a caregiver, please give me a call to schedule your free 15-minute consultation. And that's going to be at 916-755-2153.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I'm actually writing all this down because I'm going to go get a free guide right now and give it to my mom. Mom's getting a guide.
Yeah, I love that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. And we look forward to working with you in the future. I love everything you're doing.
Thank you so much, Anne. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
All right, everyone. That wraps our show up for today. Have a great week. See ya. Bye. We'll be right back.